Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hello, this is Carl Carlson talking with Fred Schenkelberg. Welcome to an episode of Speaking of Reliability, where reliability professionals talk about reliability topics in a casual setting. Fred and I wanted to chat with you about the subject of reliability tasks today and the who, what, where, when, and why of reliability tasks. This is a topic that comes up from time to time, and we thought we would just chat about it a little bit. Just to introduce the topics, years ago, Fred, when I began my reliability career in a test lab, and I started to branch out into the world of reliability, I looked at some of the reliability plans that we had, and they were pretty brief. They were essentially a listing of tools. Do this FMEA, do these reliability tests, do this analysis, and listing without any reference to how it was going to get done or who was going to do it or even what the rationale was. So that sort of began my journey to do a better job of defining reliability plans.
Well,
how about yourself?
Makes me think of the first time I was a manufacturing engineer, and I was asked to sort out, will this component, this new technology of solder attach, will it last long enough for our product? Yeah. Well, I need these test samples. I went away and sorted out what I needed to run the test, the sample boards, the parts that we needed to fabricate, the chamber space, the monitoring equipment, everything else. And it was $100,000 easy. And I went back to my team and boss and said, well, we need $100,000 to do this in 4 months. And it's like, he's like, I just want you to do a quick test to figure out if it's going to work or not. I'm like, well, you know, we went through the options and the variations, and the plan I worked out was probably the right plan. By hook or by crook, I got lucky there. And he begrudgingly agreed to that. It's like, I don't have $100,000 to fund this. unfortunately, reliability was, oh, it's important. Yeah, and we haven't thought this through yet to figure out how to do it, which is right in the middle of what you're talking about, is that reliability is not just this little add-on and another memo at the end of the day. It's it takes some work. It takes some real engineering and some real experimental know-how or coordination, depending on the task, to actually make happen.
I'll share a story, and Fred, I know you've heard this, but I'll just share it with the listeners. In the late 80s, I was hired in to be the reliability manager on the Caprice program, which is one of GM's vehicle programs. And I was brand new to the subject of reliability management at that time. I had managed the reliability test lab, but I had never been on a reliability program management before. And within a day of taking on that job, they had this major meeting where we're supposed to present to the project management all the different tasks that are going to be done to assure that this is a viable project and meets all the requirements. And so they asked me, as the new reliability manager, to put together a reliability plan and present it. And I really had not done that before. And I went about researching all the different ways, all the different tools of reliability, which I was familiar with to some degree. And I just listed them out on about 5 slides on relatively small font.
So is this like all the acronyms, FMEA, yeah, fault tree analysis, reliability block diagram, accelerated life test?
Exactly. You know, dozens of tools that, you know, that we have as our in our toolkit. And I listed them out and I said, here's the reliability plan. And that was my introduction to the subject of reliability planning. And frankly, I was very embarrassed afterwards when I thought about it, because there's no way, as I'm presenting this to this large team of people, there's no way we're going to do all these things. So I'm sure their eyes were rolling. And I learned my lesson at that point, that you have to identify the vital few tasks, and then you have to be serious about it.
Right.
You don't just name the task. You should identify who's going to do it. What are the subtasks that bring together the resources that are necessary to accomplish that task? Where's it going to be done? And like you said, Fred, why? What's the criteria that triggers that particular task?
Well, that came home to me with my very first. We had really informative early years in our reliability work. I'm thinking, Carl, the very first time I even did anything related to reliability consciously, my boss came to me and asked me to do an accelerated life test. And it was a product that was supposed to last 20 years. And I had no idea about accelerated life testing or how that all worked, and quickly learned a number of tools and techniques to do that. And Mike, my boss at the time, he had a pretty good sense that that was possible. He just wanted an engineer to go work it out and run the test. But one of the questions that I asked is, well, when do you need an answer? You know, so the when is, when are we going to do the test, is also then tied to the why of who's going to make a decision and what level of confidence do you need, which ties into my sample size. What's the criteria that you need to understand from this task, from this work, so that you can make a good decision? And we spent quite a bit of time thinking through and talking about that element of setting up this accelerated life test, is, well, who's going to read the report and what decision do they need to make? And in that particular case, the customer had a requirement that it lasts 20 years with very low probability of failure. And they wanted to know what was the likely failure mechanism and why we thought that, and then how we would then justify during development that we met that requirement. And they were not experts at reliability engineering or accelerated life testing. So a big part of the final report was, what is this accelerated testing thing and how does it work? But if I hadn't asked that question early on, or if my boss hadn't brought up that the customer doesn't know about accelerated testing, it would have been a completely different report. It might have been, oh, it works. You know?
Yeah, very good. Very good. I think there's a lot to the subject of how to develop good reliability plans, and the integrity or the granularity of each task in a reliability plan is part of that. Let me just share an example. Let's say we're working with a company and one of the tasks we want to do is develop a system reliability model. Well, in the simplified version, you'd say, develop system reliability model.
Yeah, done. That's good.
It's just, okay, so we're going to do it. Or somebody did it. You don't know if it's a good one or not. You don't know if it has the right integrity or the right assumptions and the right models and the right data.
Well, it's on a slide, so it must be good.
But it's on a slide. It must be good. So now, in the better world that we all aspire to, some of the subtasks to developing a system reliability model might include ensuring at least one person's trained in the procedure. So you might have to send someone to training or get a book or make sure they understand it. We'd have to identify the scope or the system configuration, because that's obviously necessary for the system reliability model. Each of those subtasks would have who's going to do it, when's it going to be done, and if there's any resource needed. Then you'd develop your model, but you'd have to populate it with certain reliability information, either as requirements, if you want to use the model to integrate requirements, or as actual data to be able to identify what the overall reliability is of the system. So you'd have to have that information brought in. And then we'd begin using the system reliability model to predict reliability and then adjust the information in the SRM based on actual data that you get from testing or eventually from field. So those are what I'll call subtasks, and each of those have who's going to do it by when and the resources involved that would be necessary to achieve the overall task. That's the kind of granularity that I found useful in reliability planning.
Yeah, I'm just nodding my head because I remember in a time when there were three of us working on various aspects of this product. It was a complex electromechanical device. One person was working with the team on the pneumatics, another person was working with the team on the electronics, on mechanical parts. And we all went off and did our own reliability plans with our design teams. And then we sat down together to kind of coordinate and line up what testing we're doing. And we all realized that we all wanted the one chamber we had for the bulk of the time. So the arm wrestling started at that point and looking for other resources. But even simple things like that it's basic project planning. I don't think this is rocket science here or unique to reliability engineering. It's just that when somebody says do a system level reliability model, the rest of the team that we're working with probably doesn't really know what that is. Unless we've done it a number of times and they've gotten used to it. But initially, it's a lot of coaching and training as to what this resource or this task really entails and why it's useful. Which brings me back to the why part, is that in order to garner those resources, to get the team in the room to do the FMEA, it's not just to do the FMEA. It's to prioritize our work so that we focus on and improve the critical elements to make our product more reliable. And time-wise, and so all of these pieces that you're talking about, Carl, I think that granularity is important for any plan, whether it's reliability or not. Yet more so reliability-wise, because we're bringing this into teams oftentimes that aren't well-versed in what all these tasks are. But then second, it's that it connects to decisions that they need to make. And whether it's a critical design review with the customer or it's an internal supplier selection process, there's probably a timeline and a group of people that have to make a decision. And so our tasks oftentimes are to provide the information to that team so that they can make the right decision. And if we miss that, if we miss why, what they need and when, the task is missed the vast majority of its value.
Yeah, that's very good, Fred, and I agree. And I teach this when I teach FMEA and when I'm consulting on reliability as well, that if you define the tasks well, like in FMEA, it's called recommended actions, reliability world, it's the reliability plan. Mm-hmm. If you define the tasks well, they're more likely to get executed. Well-defined tasks are easier to execute. And
Twitter moment here.
There we go. we're tweeting away. And also, just to share with you my thoughts on this, is I don't want the reliability plan to be merely written and then shelved.
Right.
The plan should be in front of management. Of course, it should be approved by management with feedback and support and buy-in and regularly reviewed for execution. So a project team could once a month or every couple months pulls out the reliability plan during product development and starts going over the tasks to be sure that they are being executed. And if they're well written, with the who, what, when, where, why, then it's really easy to review and to identify roadblocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. Yeah. So it's, And I'm sure the folks that are sitting down with us to talk about this subject, or the listeners, you could be coming at this from all kinds of different perspectives. I've run into companies that do a wonderful job, and it's putting together even the environmental testing that they're going to do with limited resources and prototypes, work out a scenario of which stresses to apply when, and they called it a waterfall test plan, but very coordinated and very thought through, and lots of what if elements in it. Well, what if the test we thought would yield the minimum number of failures kills all the products? Well, one, we learn a lot, but here's the failure analysis side of it. But then what do we do for the remaining tests, and what's the contingency plan there? But it does take thinking through it in great detail in order to, like you said, Carl, is to improve the chance of a well-executed plan. And that's where I really focus on, is that it's not just that you did a great task, it's that it actually made a difference. It actually added value to the program. It's not enough just to go do FMEA. It actually has to change the direction or reinforce the direction of the program.
Yeah, very good, Fred. And a really interesting conversation. I'd be interested in what the listeners have to say about the reliability plans and the reliability tasks that they have. And if anybody has any questions about this subject, feel free to get in touch with us on this particular topic or any other topic.
That's right. And an easy way to do that is at reliability.fm. It's where these podcasts are hosted.
Okay, well, that wraps up this particular topic. Thank you very much for listening on this the subject of speaking of reliability. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome, Carl. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.